House Business, Labor, and Consumer Affairs Committee to order, and we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 970. Janet, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 970 would remove a requirement that AmeriCorps participants be covered under unemployment insurance. You have a material at your place or that was distributed regarding the U.S. Department of Labor's ruling regarding unemployment insurance and AmeriCorps volunteers, or excuse me, AmeriCorps participants. The ruling states that they're not required to be covered for federal, to be participants in a federal program, but states can cover them. They are not excluded either. States can cover them. It's traditionally they have not been covered, and there are people here to talk about it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Dan. And Kathleen. And I'm treating you, Dan, far nicer than you did me about 4 years ago.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dan Clem. I'm a member of the Oregon Commission on Voluntary Action and Service, also known as Oregon Volunteers, as we're calling ourselves. We're appointed by the legislature, I'm not sure which body, to oversee, in coordination with Oregon Housing Community Services AmeriCorps program, and also to promote voluntary action, volunteerism, and civic service. AmeriCorps is a vital component of that. Those activities predominantly happening out in schools and in social service agencies. So the AmeriCorps program is federally funded. We put together matches and, in fact, help the communities down at the city and in the special program level as much as possible. With me today is Kathleen Joy, who's the executive director. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, with your permission, I'd like to go ahead and just make a few brief comments and then depart and leave the detail to Kathleen as I have another function, if that's all right. Again, I appreciate you hearing this bill first. Specifically, I plead to you as a city councilor for the city of Salem and also a member of Oregon Volunteers to help us with the AmeriCorps program by reinserting the legislation that's necessary to correct a problem as a result of a judicial ruling recently. This program, its purview, has been overseen by legislature through current legislation, and from a recent judicial decision, an interpretation was made that threatens our ability to be able to conduct the AmeriCorps program. This is a legislative matter, not a judicial matter. We're hoping that by you passing this legislation, it will continue to keep it within the confines of the legislature to look at as it administers the program through our commission. My second point is that I would ask that you would take a look at making the changes proposed in Senate Bill 970 so that we can continue to incent young Oregonians to want to serve in AmeriCorps, but most importantly, that the school districts and the social service agencies that help bring their needs to us, that they will want to employ, or not employ, but in fact use the AmeriCorps volunteers through this federal funding, because currently if this judicial ruling continues on, it will disincent those social service agencies, cities, school districts from wanting to use AmeriCorps employees as a result of this judicial ruling. So again, recapped, retain in legislation what belongs to the legislature, and number two, help us continue to provide the incentives to make young people want to volunteer to serve underprivileged folks and a number of other school districts by making these legislative changes. I'm available for any questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Dan. Any questions? Don't see any. You can go make the speech.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
Kathleen.
Chair Brown, members of the committee, I would understand you have a copy of the Department of Labor letter regarding their interpretation of a federal law that was actually created under probably strained circumstances, would be a nice way to say it, in 1994 with the passage of the National Service and Trust Act, putting the Clinton AmeriCorps program into federal statute was a long and very challenging process in which there were a number of compromises made along the way, and it's kind of like one of those horses created by a committee that turned into a camel. In some sections of the federal law, it's very clear that our AmeriCorps, our members are called participants. You find that language specifically instilled in the federal law, and I've given you the quotes in the testimony that I've provided. A participant shall not be considered to be an employee of the program in which the participant is enrolled. Thus, as a matter of employment law, the employer-employee relationship does not exist between the grantee-subgrantee program and participant. However, in another section of the same bill, they allowed use of federal funds to pay workers' comp and FICA for AmeriCorps participants, so it was allowed there. And the interpretation regarding unemployment was basically the federal labor department said they would not consider the AmeriCorps stipend for federal unemployment benefits, but left it open to the states to make that and to do that interpretation. So the in Oregon, since we started AmeriCorps programming in 1994, the AmeriCorps stipend has never been included in consideration for unemployment benefits by the employment department until we had this problem with compounded by errors on the fact of our sponsoring organization that were actually the Forest Grove School District was the employer, the sponsor, program sponsor of record for the AmeriCorps member. There was some misinterpretation that happened through the employment department and then an administrative law judge who didn't get accurate information about who wrote the paycheck for the AmeriCorps people, and it was very convoluted, and we all agreed that what we needed to do was just come to you all and say, let's take this, what's currently happening, and turn it statutorily to make a permanent exclusion from the AmeriCorps stipend. There is no loss of revenue because there are no AmeriCorps programs who have ever paid money into an unemployment fund, and there has only been of the 700 a year, like 7,000 AmeriCorps members that have served in Oregon, there has been only this one instance in this decision that was made last summer where an AmeriCorps member has actually received unemployment compensation for the stipend she earned as a volunteer.
Thank you, Kathleen. Any questions? Don't see any.
Easy. Really?
Thank you very much for your testimony.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Tamara, does the employment department have any thing to put on record in there?
I planned on it, but I don't know.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tamara Brickman. I'm the legislative coordinator for the Oregon Employment Department, and we are neutral on this bill. It basically, we see it as a clarification. We had been treating AmeriCorps workers, we had not been counting AmeriCorps workers' stipends for unemployment insurance purposes, and then an employment appeals board, which is a board that is an appeal that came up through the employment appeals board, which is a board that's appointed by the governor, that made a decision to award benefits to this one individual in this particular case, and so we just see this amendment as clarification needed to make sure that AmeriCorps stipends aren't counted as wages in the future.
Thank you, Tim. Any questions?
I do, and I apologize for coming in late. The issue here, though, is that because the AmeriCorps volunteers will get the money at the end of their service, that therefore they don't need or deserve unemployment. Is that the issue?
No, Mr. Chair, Representative Shields. Under federal law, there's a federal law that has been written that says that the AmeriCorps individuals, the participants in the program are not considered employees, and that was a federal law that was written when they wrote this into the statute. And can you provide? Yeah. I'm sorry, I forgot.
That's cool.
If the testimony you've got on the first page, it will tell you the citation.
Kathleen, could you come up to the mic, please?
Yeah. Again, I apologize.
The packet that you've got will show you the citation from the federal law, and I quoted it earlier at the bottom of page one of my testimony about the participant not be considered an employee under federal law. So these are stipended volunteers.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In the unemployment benefits that were paid to one individual, apparently was based, they based upon state law without regard to the federal law.
Mr. Chair, there is no state, there is no law on the books that decides whether or not these are covered or not covered. We just basically have been following federal direction under an unemployment insurance program letter that you have there in your packet.
Okay.
And so this actually just adds clarity to the law to say that it won't be considered, the stipends won't be considered for purposes of unemployment insurance, to continue the practice that I believe it happens in almost all of the states.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Any other questions? Don't see any. Thank you again for your testimony. Appreciate it. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 970 and open the work session on Senate Bill 970.
Mr. Chair.
Representative,
I move the Senate Bill 970 be passed along to the House floor with a two-pass recommendation.
Representative Gilman moves Senate Bill 970 to the House floor with a two-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Shields.
I didn't. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't want to get into it too much with questions that I had because I was here late, but I will be voting yes, but I just wanted to say, you know, there might be a small chance if I found out more information I could vote no on the floor.
Thank you, Representative. Any other comments? Seeing none, Katie, will you call the roll, please?
Representative
Esposito.
Aye.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative
Holding.
Aye.
Representative
Kidd.
Excuse.
Representative Chalkwood.
Aye.
Representative
Kidd. Aye.
Chair Brown.
Aye. Motion carry. You need a carrier?
I'll do it.
Representative Gilman will carry on the floor for us. Open the public hearing on Senate Bill 37. Janet, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 37, and you should have the B engrossed version of the bill. It was pre-session filed for the Employment Department. It would allow the Employment Department to assess unpaid unemployment insurance tax debt against a reorganized business entity if the entity is substantially the same as the entity that acquired the debt. It does allow for appeal of the department's decision in case such case. Mr. Chair, there is a fiscal impact statement for the bill, and it had a 25-0 Senate vote.
There is a fiscal?
Let me see. That's what it says. I may have to take that back.
Yeah, it does say the fiscal impact issue.
Maybe Tamara will know. I don't think I have the fiscal
impact. Anybody have one?
No, I don't have one.
Tamara, do you have one?
Well, I'm just going to this one.
Let's see, might I have Rob Edwards come up too? So.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, again, my name is Tamara Brickman. I'm the legislative coordinator for the Employment Department. And I don't believe that there is an actual fiscal impact with respect to affecting our budget, but what I do believe is that this would result in the potential collection of additional taxes that would otherwise be due.
It would be positive.
And I don't believe it has any effect on our actual operating expenses or operating budget.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Rob Edwards. I'm the Central Operations Manager for the Tax Section of the Employment Department, and Tamara has just taken my only copy before I had a chance to read it.
Well, that means you're done.
So
Sorry.
Thank you.
It's at 5.
And it does show that there is no fiscal impact. And as Tamara has mentioned, we believe there will be a positive revenue impact to the UI Trust Fund. Very briefly, I've submitted written testimony. I have to rescind what I just said?
No, that's a positive.
That's a positive. Thank you. Okay. $363,224 in 05-07 and $580,948 in 07-09. I've submitted written testimony, so I'll be very brief with the description. What this bill does is it allows the Employment Department tax section to assess unpaid unemployment insurance taxes against what we're deeming a reorganized business. Some of you may be familiar with a term called serial corporations or serial LLCs. This is where a business will shut down after running up a debt, reopen possibly the next bit day in the same location, same operating features, same owner, same employees, but under a different name, basically. And what we're trying to get at with this bill is being able to transfer the debt to that new business and say, because you owe taxes from the old business, you have to pay it under the new business. You may also be familiar with House Bill 2124, which we submitted to combat the practice of SUTA dumping. This is distinguishable. SUTA dumping is a rate manipulation scheme, and House Bill 2124 is a preventative measure to keep people from manipulating their rates. What Senate Bill 37 does is allows us to collect money that we wouldn't otherwise be able to collect after it's owed to us.
Mm-hmm.
Happy to take questions.
Any questions? Don't see any. Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on Senate Bill 37B? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 37B and open the work session on Senate Bill 37B.
Mr. Chair, I move with Senate Bill 37B to the floor with a due process recommendation.
Representative Schaffer moves Senate Bill 37B to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? This is very similar, as testimony said, is very similar to the bill we passed out earlier.
Mm-hmm.
We'll just hopefully collect our money after the fact, the intent. Is there any other discussion? Seeing none, Katie, call the roll.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative
Colby. Aye.
Representative
Kitts.
Excuse. Representative Shockwell.
Aye.
Representative
Shields. Aye.
Representative Escobar.
Aye.
Chair Brown.
Aye. Motion carries. Take the consent calendar.
That was good to me, Mr. Chair. So moved.
Representative Schaffler moves Senate Bill 37B be placed on the consent calendar. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 93. Jen, please. Hope we got the whole Employment Department here tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 93 repeals a portion of existing statute relating to the treatment of church associations, organizations, and ministers for the purposes of unemployment insurance. It repeals these provisions because they have been deemed to be unconstitutional. Mr. Chair, there are some repeals, and it's not to it's not to ORS, but it's to statutory law at Oregon laws, and those are shown in the sheet that looks like this in your packet.
Okay. Got it. Okay. Thank you, Janet. Pat, the wall, please. He's a preacher.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Pat Dullival. I'm the Field Operations Manager of the Employment Department Tax Section. Senate Bill 93 is a housekeeping bill to remove a provision in the law deemed unconstitutional by Oregon courts. I did not plan on reiterating the history of the court action in my verbal testimony, but you do have it in the written testimony. This bill will also move the definition of nonprofit employing unit to the definitional section of our law, and it will also alphabetize the definitions. That pretty much concludes my testimony, and I'm be happy to stay and answer questions if you have any.
Thank you, Pat. Is there any questions?
Mr. Chair, I just hope all these ministers are praying for us.
I was wondering why Senator Shields voted against them.
I have no idea. He's an ordained minister. He's my senator, and I'll ask him tomorrow.
Thank you. I don't see any questions. Thank you very much for your testimony. Anyone else to testify on Senate Bill 93? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 93 and open the work session. Representative Chalker.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 93 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Chalker moves Senate Bill 93 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, Katie, will call the roll, please.
Representative Colby.
Aye.
Representative Fitch.
Excuse.
Representative Chalker.
Aye.
Representative Shields.
Aye.
Representative
Baskerville.
Aye.
Representative
Gilman. Aye.
Chair Brady. Aye. Motion carries. Representative Schaffler. Consent gallery.
I so move, Mr. Chair.
Representative Schaffler moves the Senate Bill 93 be placed on the consent calendar. Any discussion? Any objection? We'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 214A. And I don't even have a sign-up sheet. We'll take anybody that came forward, though. Now's your chance.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good evening. My name is Robert Roth. I'm Assistant Attorney General with the Department of Justice. Senate Bill 214A is about the buyer's right to cancel door-to-door sales within 3 days. It's been on the statute. It's been a statute since 1971 in Oregon, but the law now requires two different notices of that right be given. There's an Oregon provision that has one kind of a notice, and then there's a federal provision under the FTC rule that has a different notice. And it's a hardship for businesses. It's confusing to consumers. So what this bill would do would be to essentially conform Oregon law to the FTC rule. They'd have essentially the same notice requirements, and only one notice would satisfy both statutes. Secondly, another reason we support the bill is because the FTC rule, which has essentially the same protections, requires federal enforcement, and the FTC can't act on everything that needs attention. But this bill requires no government action, no expenditure of public resources, and can simply be enforced by the buyer. Finally, the other reason for the bill is that sellers in this context no longer just go door to door, but essentially try to get people out of their homes into other temporary locations, motel rooms, restaurants, dormitory lounges, where they can give them a sales pitch that basically talks them into something that they have some second thoughts about, but it's an evasion of the statute. The FTC rule was amended to cover that situation, but the Oregon statute has not been so amended. So basically, for all these reasons, this bill would bring the Oregon and Federal Trade Commission provisions into basically make them comply with each other and enable businesses to comply by only giving one form of notice. If there are any questions, and thank you for your attention.
Thank you for your testimony. You might as well go ahead and get the full load now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Hal Scoggins. I'm an attorney with Farley Witt, and I'm here representing United Consumer Financial Services, which is a company that actually provides financing for the door-to-door sales transactions that are regulated under this statute. And we're here in the unusual but happy position of agreeing with the Department of Justice that this regulation is, or the bill that changes the regulation is a great thing. Right now, our client is in the unenviable position of having two disclosure rules that cannot be both complied with. And so they're faced with either giving the federal notice and violating the Oregon statute, or giving the Oregon notice and violating the federal statute, or giving both notices and potentially violating both statutes and confusing the consumer. And this bill resolves that problem. We're happy to comply with the appropriate disclosure requirements, give the consumers all the rights to rescind the transactions that they need to have, give them all the disclosures of those rights that are appropriate. We just want to be able to follow the law and not be forced into a situation where we have to violate either the federal or the state law. So UCFS is fully in support of this bill, and I think it'll be a benefit to Oregon consumers as well as businesses that do this type of transaction in Oregon. Thank you, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Roth, the last sentence on your testimony says the bill also clarifies that services provided by financial institutions are not affected by our statute. Could you explain that for me?
Well, it's simply, I don't think that as written the bill would affect financial institutions, but the financial institutions wanted a clarification to make that clear, so we simply put a provision in there. It's on page 2 of the bill, line 4. There's a list of the exemptions, and it lists the activities of a financial institution as defined in the federal statute.
So, hello, Mr.
President.
So, people who sell financial services door to door would be exempt from this?
I'm not aware that financial services are sold door to door. Is that the way you?
Well, I mean, that's my question. If there are people that are doing it, we might want to regulate it more than less.
Well, if we find that that's an issue, we may have to go back and revisit. But it was just something that we don't think that as written it would, you know, the way you define it, personal solicitation, some of the other aspects of the transaction just wouldn't apply to a financial institution. But and it's financial institutions as defined in the federal statute.
Correct. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I think I know where Mr. Martinez is. I can call him up and get him down here.
he's well aware.
Confident he is.
He's watching.
Any other questions?
No, he's not. Magoo's phone service is broken.
Thank you, gentlemen, for your testimony. Appreciate it.
Thank
is
you.
There anyone else to testify on Senate Bill 214? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 214 and open a work session on Senate Bill 214.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kitts.
I'm going to present Bill 214 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Kitts moves Senate Bill 214 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Seeing none.
Seeing none. Katie, please call the roll. I got a heckle. Representative Kitts, do you vote?
I vote aye.
Okay.
Aye.
Motion carried. Representative Kitts.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the Senate Bill 214 be placed on the consent calendar.
Representative Kitts moves that Senate Bill 214 be placed on the consent calendar. Is there any objection? Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Kitts.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we rescind all bills that we have sent out of the Business and Labor Committee to the floor back to committee for the purposes of placing them on the consent calendar so that we don't have to be in double floor sessions all day long.
That motion is too late.
No. Duly noted.
No more.
Let's see, we're down to what?
That's 187.
Okay, we're going to open the public hearing on Senate Bill 187, and Janet, you get the first word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 187 was introduced at the request of the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development, and it modifies the membership requirements of the State Workforce Investment Board and clarifies that legislators that are appointed to the board are non-voting members and serve in an advisory capacity. Mr. Chair, state law currently names 41 members to the board. So that's what they're trying to
Mr. Chair?
This must be the board that designs the racehorse. It came out looking like a camel then.
Mr. Chair, I bet they're about as effective as we are when we get down on the floor some days. God almighty.
Thank you, Ken. We do act under control sometimes.
It's late in the day. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Greg White. I'm executive staff for the Oregon Workforce Investment Board, and I've pretty much shepherded this from the beginning. It's pretty straightforward. It's pretty simple. It's kind of a cleanup. Oregon law has not been in conflict with the federal statute, but it has required more members than the federal statute does. One example would be the Oregon law says that it must have that the board must have 20 business members. The federal law just says majority business members. So if we get somebody on the public side that can fill more than one required function, we can't reduce the numbers of the overall board. So that's one way that we would be able to gradually reduce the size and make it more effective and smaller. We wouldn't do a wholesale reduction in members. We'd just do it through attrition. Second, in this Congress, the Workforce Investment Act is due for reauthorization, and it is expected that the membership requirements of state workforce boards and local workforce boards will change in that reauthorization, and this will give us the opportunity, if we just peg it to the federal membership requirements, to be flexible when that happens. Third, it was Legislative Council that brought to our attention the fact that since the Workforce Investment Board does have some executive functions, that there was a separation of powers conflict with the legislative members. There are two members of the House and two members of the Senate that are required to be on the board. And so we have, at their request, modified the bill. That was the A version, to make legislative members ex officio non-voting members. The one other small change, this was also at the request of Legislative Council, is that the current statute does say that state and local workforce investment boards will have five-year plans, but that is expected to change in the reauthorization at the federal level. So this would remove that conflict as well, and that's all this bill does.
Thank you, sir. Any questions? Don't see any. Thank you very much. Tamara, you want to testify on this and do it? Thank you. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 187 and open the work session on Senate Bill 187.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kitts.
Move Senate Bill 187 before the due pass recommendation.
Representative Kitts moves Senate Bill 187 to the floor at the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, Katie, call the roll, please.
Aye.
Aye.
Representative
Askew. Aye.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative
Colby.
Aye.
Representative Kitts.
Aye.
Chair Brown. Aye. Motion carries.
Mr. Chair.
And Representative Shoffler.
Move we put it on the consent calendar.
You sure we don't need a carrier for that?
No.
As you wish, Mr. Chair. Representative Shoffler moves that Senate Bill 187 be placed on the consent calendar. Any discussion? Any objection? Then that's ordered.
And Mr. Chair, I move to suspend the rules to allow Representative Kitts to vote on Senate Bills 37B, 93, and 970.
Representative Shoffler moves the rules be suspended to allow Representative Kitts to vote on
what bills?
97, 93, and 37.
970.
Okay. Representative Kitts, how do you vote on Senate Bill 970?
I vote yes.
You'd have to carry the bill otherwise.
Okay.
Senate Bill 93.
I vote yes.
And on Senate Bill 37?
I vote yes.
Representative Kitts votes yes on 970, 93, and 37. Do you have any objection to these being placed on the consent calendar?
No, sir.
Order. Okay, we are adjourned, right? Thank you, committee.